Umbrit, we have a one-man show presented by Lance Christensen from Golden, Colorado. He's the digital and an audio archivist at Colorado State Archives, and he'll be giving a presentation on the recordings of Colorado Governor Ralph Carr from 1941 to 1943. It's all yours.
I'll have to hook up a couple things here real quick. Would like to point out I do have some handouts for this. They're on that side of the room there. There should be plenty for everybody. Works. How about that? Except, where is my first slide? Well, fine. I had an opening slide and it disappeared, so we'll just go forward. Once again, my name is Lance Christensen. I do work at the Colorado State Archives. This material I'm going to be presenting to you, the recordings themselves are actually housed across the street from us in downtown Denver at the Colorado Historical Society. I will be talking to you about the life and voice of Governor Ralph L. Carr. Author Adam Schrager called Carr the principled politician, and indeed Carr was the only Western governor to oppose the internment of Japanese Americans in the Second World War, a stance which cost him a Senate seat in 1942. But between 1939 and 1943, he defended Colorado's right to its water, reformed schools and prisons, balanced the budget, and led his state through the first difficult year of what he called the worst war in history. I'll start by telling you a little bit about the governor, and then I'll talk about the recordings themselves, which cover his second term, and then finally I'm going to let the governor speak for himself, a rare opportunity to hear the voice of one of the most influential governors in my state's history. The handout you have tells a little bit of that history of him, as well as has contact information for the Historic Society, the Archives, and others, if you want to learn more about this, and also has information on the recordings themselves. I'm going to try not to talk too much if I can possibly get away with it, and this is in keeping with the governor's own personal rule, which is never speak beyond the bladder capacity of your audience. Ralph Lawrence Carr was born December 11, 1887, in Rosita, Colorado, which is a small town near West Cliff, in south central Colorado, just southwest of Pueblo. His father was a miner, and within a few years they moved to new mining towns seeking opportunities, first to the mining town of Aspen, and then to the bustling town of Cripple Creek, a place that was once called the richest cow pasture on earth. It was there that he witnessed shootings in bars, fights in the streets, and managed to attend public school, where purportedly he helped his fellow students with their Latin homework at the age of six. When he grew up, he left Cripple Creek to work as a coffee bagger in Colorado Springs to raise money for college, at which time he attended the University of Colorado in Boulder, first as a journalism major, and then upon graduation, astounded all of his friends by going and actually achieving a degree in law. He married and moved to Victor, Colorado, another small mining town, where he was editor of the Victor Daily Record, in direct competition with one of his dearest college friends, a gentleman by the name of Lowell Thomas. Yes, that Lowell Thomas, who actually was the editor of the Victor Daily News that was started specifically to compete with the paper that Carr was working on. He did that for a couple of years and then left to go to Trinidad to be the editor of the Evening Picket Wire. Then after that, he moved to Antonito. Antonito is a very small town. It's located in the very south-central part of Colorado, just north of the New Mexico border. If you're in a little town like Antonito, Carr said, you learn to do everything. Country lawyers are the best because they have to learn everything. We have more time to sit around and read law books than lawyers in the city do. Indeed, Antonito, a small agricultural town, offered a wide range of legal challenges for Carr, including litigating irrigation issues, cattle concerns, and he actually learned Spanish because many of his customers being the local native speakers, actually spoke Spanish. Carr was appointed Deputy Attorney General in 1927, where he became well-known in the region as being an expert in water law, and then was tasked by President Hoover in 1929 to be the U.S. Attorney for the region. It was in that position that he gained a reputation for being both unbribable and completely incorruptible, which was important when pursuing bootleggers at that particular time. Ultimately, he was chosen by the Republican Party to run for governor, a post he won in 1938. Colorado was in a desperate budget crisis at the time, and the state government was swollen with unnecessary bureaus and political appointees. Within hours of taking office, he astounded the legislature by presenting a plan to balance the budget by shifting property taxes, which were generally for schools, and shifting them to pay state services that hadn't been paid for months. The schools were paid a year in advance, and so he feared he had a year to work things out. Nobody wanted taxes at that time. He also made tremendous cuts to the state government, getting rid of the bureaus and offices that had been created under the previous governor. When the legislature balked at this and didn't want to pass anything, he took a page from FDR's playbook and went on the radio with weekly addresses urging people to go and to contact their legislators and make them work. By 1941, the budget was balanced, and this propelled him into a second term where he was elected by a landslide. As mentioned earlier, the Carr recordings are a unique record of his second term in office. There's a total of 23 records, 37 sides in all, a mixture of 12 and 16-inch instantaneous discs recorded at both 78 and 33 RPM. These are all glass-based records, vinyl over the top of them. When I first saw them, they were stored in a portable record case with no documentation as to who actually donated this. In fact, actually checking with society, they have records of all of the personal papers that have been donated considering Governor Carr. There's no information whatsoever where these recordings came from. They've never been transferred before, and they're very interesting. They're a collection of air checks from local radio stations, KOA, KLZ, KMYR, and KFEL. And then there's two other sets of recordings, one from KRVG in Westlake, Texas, and one that's marked the Radio Newsreel Productions of Hollywood, California. I originally cataloged these records as part of a survey of instantaneous discs at the Society in 1998. When I revisited the Society in 2005, the records had been moved into acid-free sleeves and were stored in an archival box. All the records at that time exhibited signs of decay. There was one record that had been almost unplayable when I saw it in 1998, and by 2005, all of the vinyl had shrunk and split and were laying in pieces at the bottom of the box. It had just become unplayable. Others had degraded over that period of time with the grooves losing a little bit of their cohesiveness and pieces starting to flake off there. So I took the opportunity at that time to go ahead and transfer them. They are transferred using a Grado cartridge. I alternated between 2.5 and 3.5 styluses to actually do this. They were recorded directly to PC using SoundForge at that time, using a 24-bit 44.1 kilohertz format, which was what I had available at that time. This was one of my first projects. In some instances, I played sections of records that had been damaged. Several of them had chips that were taken out of the edge of them. In those cases, I made several plays through the record to try to get audio through the skips so that later on I could go back and actually piece them together. It wasn't until 2010 I actually revisited this project as part of and actually did rudimentary cleanup on them at that time for a Japanese television company that was doing a documentary for airing in Tokyo, and they wanted access to these recordings. And so at that time I did some rudimentary cleanup and edited them together. What you're going to hear today are going to be those edits. Some of them have been edited for the presentation. The original archival material I've got on a separate hard disk that I've stored with the Society. What I'm going to do right now is give you just a short example of one of the edits, just to give you an idea of what I was working with. And this is a segment from side 9 of the 1578 RPM sides from from Carr's final address to the legislature in 1943. So here's one of those segments. I have the text on the screen.
The point where we are far from the Mequip village of 50 years ago, those are...
Here's another play through that same segment.
Where we are far away from the methods and equipment and knowledge of 50 years ago, as the poles are separated, we have not advanced a step.
And then finally, here's the final edit.
To the point where we are far away from the methods and equipment and knowledge of 50 years ago, as the poles are separated, we have not advanced a step.
So sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. There are some segments where I just had to just not have anything in the final edits, skip a sentence or two, just because that's all that could be accomplished with them. So as I said before, these do cover his second term and just a little beyond it, a period from January 16, 1941, which was his inauguration day, through a few talks on water that were recorded December 11, 1943, which is almost a year after he left office. But quite frankly, you've heard enough from me. So let's go back to 1941 and the inauguration ball that was held in Denver after the inauguration of the governor to his second term. Here's Governor Carr.
Ladies and gentlemen, here he is. You can hear him. Hear the applause. Ladies and gentlemen, His Excellency, the Governor of Colorado, Mr. Ralph L. Carr.
People of Colorado, we're not engaged entirely in serious business in Denver these days, while we quarrel about budgets and water and taxes, we take time out for just a little merrymaking. And tonight I'm looking out over the most colorful, the kindest crowd that a man in my position has ever faced. And on top of the wonderful treatment I've enjoyed at the hands of all of Colorado for the last 2 years, we come tonight with members of both parties about equally mixed here, I think, tonight, being nice to their governor. And I want you to know how much I appreciate it.
In this next segment, we're going to get to hear classic Governor Carr and his storytelling at its best. One thing to understand about the governor is he was a strict constitutionalist, where he supported the rights of individuals to pursue their own ends, and he was very much against the federal government telling people what to do. He was staunchly against the New Deal, as he saw that as federal domination over states' rights. So what we're going to hear is a recording that was made at the Biltmore Hotel in Los Angeles, where he tells a story about an early case that he argued, a case when he was down in Antonita, and he uses this story to demonstrate his disdain for the New Deal. But I'll let you listen.
The next morning, my client came in again, and he had a summons out of the Justice of the Peace Court in New Mexico, printed in the Spanish form. Same plaintiff, same defendant, same horse, same amount of money, except they had added the cost of the Colorado court the day before. So I told him we'd have to go over there and defend him, or else they'd be taking all his sheep someday. And a few days later, I filled the back end of the fort with a lot of wonderful law books. I knew how good they were because they had fine bindings. And I spent the day trying that lawsuit in a little 12x12 adobe shack. The justice was very formal. He had an upended barrel for his bench, and he had a hammer for a gavel. And when he called court to order, he'd pound that hammer on the barrel bottom and say, "Here he is. This court is now in sections." We spent the day trying to show him that he had no jurisdiction because the question had been determined in a Colorado court, which had jurisdiction of the subject matter and the parties, and that under the Constitution, that judgment was to be given full faith and credit in all of the courts of the sister states. It was a cold day in January, the one you've no heard about often. And about nightfall, when the shadows were getting long, the judge arose to render his decision. And he looked at me and says, "Mr. Carr, before I render my decision in this case, there is one question I'd like to ask you." I said, "All right, Your Honor." He said, "I would like to know what was that last book you just read from." I squared my shoulders and threw my head back and said,
That was the Constitution of the United States of America, Your Honor. He said, I thought so. Well, he says it may have some force in Colorado, but it doesn't go in New Mexico. Now, when my friends tell me they are the original New Dealers, I tell them they're wrong, because I discovered the original New Dealer in New Mexico, in Adobe Justice of the Peace Corps 25 years ago.
Governor Carr had a great sense of humor and a strong love of his native Colorado. This next recording is from a recording that was made when a delegation of Colorado leaders went to Texas, probably on some sort of trade mission, I would assume, where the governor had expounded in advance about the wonderful weather to be found in Colorado, and the Texas locals, not wanting to be outdone, contradicted the governor with the reporting of what the weather conditions really were in Denver that mid-November day.
At 11 o'clock this morning, it was snowing in Denver. The Denver Weather Bureau holds some hope for weather changing to partly cloudy by tonight. Temperature at 11 a.m. in Denver, 33.
We arranged that. We knew the boys would be down here where it was so hot, and we knew that it'd cool them off if they knew that things were normal up in Colorado. And at the same time, we thought you might appreciate it. I'll tell you what you should do. If you think that's funny, you come up on Christmas Day and we'll play golf with you on green grass as you ever saw in the Lower Rio Grande. We have two teams which play baseball every Sunday when they can. And in the last 10 years, they haven't missed as many as 5 Sundays playing baseball. Am I right? Now aren't you ashamed?
Of course, obviously, the governor had many strong opinions, and one of his strongest concerned the attempts by the federal government to create the Arkansas Valley Authority. This is based on the Tennessee Valley Authority that had occurred several years earlier. And the idea behind the Arkansas Valley Authority was very much the same, where the federal government would take full control over Colorado's water, have the state be responsible for the building of dams and levees, and then it would dissolve all existing water compacts with neighboring states. Carr was very much against this and was one of the spearheads that actually got it defeated in Congress through his talks on this. But right now he talks about states' rights to water.
Decisions of the federal courts, including the United States Supreme Court and many, many announcements, was that the water of these western states is the property of the states, to be divided equitably between the states. Started in the Kansas-Colorado case on the Arkansas. And it was stated at that time, in answer to the contention of the Attorney General of the United States, that the federal government not only didn't own any of that water, but had no right to control it or to distribute it. That was 1907.
Here he gives his general authority on what he thinks about federal authority over states.
Is there anything in the atmosphere in Washington, D.C., which makes men into supermen and makes it possible for them to do our own business better than we can do it at home with our knowledge of our conditions?
And finally on this subject, he tells a little story that gives his opinion on the excessive spending practices that he saw in the federal government.
There was a man from our country who made his money in the oil business. That was back in the days before a certain man became the conservator of our oil industries. That was in the days when we believed in the right of a man to make a profit and to keep it, if he could. And he went to New York, as all Westerners do, as soon as he got a little money. And he went up in the Empire Building, clear up on top, and he stood out there in the evening breeze, and some peculiar inclination seized him, and he started throwing his money away from all of his pockets in every direction, and the caretaker saw him and thought he was insane and called a policeman, and the policeman came and took him in charge and started for the elevator with him. On the way to the elevator, he stopped at a telephone and called the station house and asked for the hurry-up wagon and 4 policemen. Got on the elevator, and the man from Colorado said, what'd you call the 4 cops for? Well, he said, you're a desperate criminal and I want to take no chances. I said, what have I done? Why, he said, aren't you the man who was throwing money away up here on top of the building a few minutes ago? Yes, it was my money. What difference does that make? Well, he says, you violated a very important federal statute. Says, how's that? What have I done? He says, you have impersonated a federal treasury official.
With the coming of the war, dramatic change came both to Carr's state and the nation. Governor Carr was in Grand Junction on the western slope of Colorado the morning of December 7th and drove through the night to get back to Denver in those pre-interstate days so that he could mobilize his government and address the citizens of the state. We're fortunate to have two of those addresses here today. His initial address was on station KFEL.
How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is Bill Welch speaking now from the offices of Governor Ralph L. Carr in the state capitol. Just 24 hours ago, the treacherous attack by the Japanese upon the United States began. But in that short period of time, the state of Colorado has already begun to integrate itself into the great problems of the war. Now coming fresh from the meeting, Governor Ralph L. Carr steps up to a KFEL microphone to report to you of our listening audience on the first steps taken by the state of Colorado. Governor Carr.
People of Colorado, fellow Americans, we are different men and women from what we were 36 hours ago. Things have happened which threaten to change the whole course of the life of every man and woman in the United States and perhaps in all the world. Our nation has been attacked. Our people have been killed. Our property has been destroyed. No notice, no aggravation justifies that conduct. By the action of the Japanese yesterday, the whole question of the future of humanity and civilization has been raised. It is our duty to so arrange our lives, to so conduct our businesses and our activities, that everything will be working toward the common end, the defense of America, the defense of the American civilization.
The second segment is from radio station KOA, this was broadcast probably several hours later. This will be the longest segment you listen to today. And there's two things to listen for in this particular recording. One, he makes mention of the Council of Defense and preparations that have been made in advance. In Colorado, the Colorado National Guard was federalized in 1940, and they already had preparations in mind just in case war broke out. So what he's referring to are preparations that had taken place for many months and were now actually being activated. The second piece to listen for in this is the only mention of Japanese Americans that are in this collection. It's a brief comment by Colonel Milliken of the Council of Defense, which unfortunately is actually cut off by the fact they had to change the record in the middle of the broadcast. So they had to turn the record over to continue, and it cuts off that little bit of it. But here we go.
People of Colorado, fellow Americans, at the reconvening of the Council of Defense in the State House this afternoon, a special committee which had been appointed to draft a message to the people on the present situation presented the following on behalf of the governor and the Colorado Council of Defense. To the people of Colorado, your governor and the Colorado Council of Defense, created by the last legislature, met at the state capitol Monday, December 8, 1941, while the President of the United States was delivering his message to Congress. The Defense Council informs you that the plans which have been in the making during the past several months are now operating. Immediate action has been taken to coordinate all civil defense efforts with the national government and to set in motion all local efforts throughout the state. We inform you that vigilant patriotic efforts must be immediately put into effect and maintained to preserve the tranquility of our homes and our families in face of attacks from enemies of our nation and state. It is imperative and an expression of patriotism to immediately purchase defense stamps and bonds. The women have their place in all our defense efforts in connection with the Red Cross and public health services in maintaining the high community morale and in the home. Every citizen has a place in the defense of our country, and we call upon the people to give to your Council of Defense your full cooperation in this hour of great emergency. We pledge to the nation the resources of this state. We must give of our time and unstinted efforts to overcome the great danger which now confronts us. No sacrifice is too great to accomplish this end. We pledge our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor to the accomplishment of the duties which now lie before us. In addition to that, the Civil Protection Committee met in response to suggestions from Washington that we take every effort to prevent sabotage of public buildings and utilities, of reservoirs, railroad bridges and tunnels, and water systems. That committee has spent most of the afternoon preparing telegrams to the sheriffs and the mayors of the principal towns and cities in Colorado, calling upon them to act immediately. Colonel Eugene D. Milliken, chairman of the Civil Protection Committee of the Council of Defense, is with us to read you the telegram and to give instructions regarding the business of carrying out these suggestions. I give you Colonel Eugene D. Milliken.
That all monies of Japanese, both citizens and nationals, are to be frozen immediately. This order came to Denver over the telephone, and it was stated that there may have been a mistake in that the money in banks of Japanese American citizens were also to be included in the frozen assets. In this connection, Governor Carr stated before the Defense Council.
Thank you, General Milliken. We know what Colorado is going to do. I am confident of what my people intend to do. And I am grateful for the reaction which has followed the announcement that we want help. And I am more than grateful for the manner in which cooperation has poured in through telephone messages, through private calls, and through letters throughout the day from people who want to help. My answer is, we pointed out a way for you to help. See your sheriffs and mayors, and you will be at work tonight.
I was mistaken on this. That was Station KLZ. Excuse me on that. The next recording in the wartime period of what of the few that we have, this is from Colorado Day, which is August 1st, which is when Colorado became a state. There's two short segments from this one. This actually is on KOA Radio. You will hear first an opportunity that the governor took to honor the brave soldiers who were serving at that time in the war effort.
We are making history in this world tonight. Colorado men have already won recognition for outstanding bravery and effort in the most terrible war that has ever been evolved by man to confuse and retard man's growth. Thousands upon thousands of men have been called from their homes and are following the colors in lands whose location they could not have given 8 months ago. Some have given their lives. We are busy in an attempt to make a record of those heroes. But when one of them makes the supreme sacrifice or receives recognition, we usually find only a meager story of his birth date, his education, and his immediate family. The things which these men are doing and which they will do tomorrow make living history. Their sons and daughters and their grandchildren and great-grandchildren will cherish every word, every record, every tradition which might be gathered now and left in a treasure chest of memories.
You might sense a theme there. He's talking about looking at history in a slightly different way, and he ends his speech that day speaking to that, the idea that history is not about great events, great men, great women, but it's about ordinary people doing ordinary things.
Let us write something about the early towns of the mountains, of the ranchmen and the farmers, which deals with something besides saloon brawls and pistol duels. There were men who never wore guns for social purposes, who did more for Colorado than all the bad men for whom we are said to be noted. Let us gather the inside story, the true story of Colorado. Let every person write the story of his family and the stories which his grandparents told. Let it deal with everyday life and the everyday things of life, which, after all, are the life which has built Colorado. There is so much of adventure, so much of bravery, so much of interest in Colorado's story that it needs no embellishing. There is as much color in the life of a single family which wrested a home from the hillsides of the Rockies as there is in a western sunset. Let's tell that story.
You have just heard the Honorable Ralph L. Carr, Governor of Colorado, deliver some very interesting comments on Colorado's 66th birthday. This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Governor Ralph Carr was alone in the Western governors in allowing the Japanese to enter the state after being forced out of their homes in California in 1942, and then was again alone of all the Western governors in opposing the opening of the internment camps. Carr felt this was a matter of constitutionality, stating that it was illegal to imprison American citizens based only on national origin. Quote, "Our Constitution guarantees to every man, before he is deprived of his freedom, that there will be charges and proof of misconduct and a fair hearing. In Colorado, there are thousands of men and women. In the nation, there are millions of them who, by reason of blood only, are regarded by people as unfriendly. The Japanese are protected by the same Constitution that protects us. An American citizen of Japanese descent has the same rights as any citizen. If you harm them, then you must first harm me." Despite his protests, an internment camp was established near the southeast town of Grenada, a place called Amachi. It was a desolate, barren place and was eventually home to over 7,500 Japanese Americans. Carr made efforts to make sure they were treated well, that when they were allowed to leave the camp, they were treated properly in the adjoining towns, and found work for them on many of the farms, which actually were hurting for workers because a lot of the men that used to work the fields were now serving in the military overseas. He actually even hired one of the internees as his housekeeper and helped pay for her college while she was helping take care of his house. It earned him the lasting thanks of the Japanese American community, but it ended up costing him. In November 1942, he lost his bid for the U.S. Senate, losing to Democrat Big Ed Johnson by a mere 8,000 votes. And so it was that Governor Carr spoke to the joint House and Senate of the Colorado State Legislature January 8, 1941, for the very last time. This is the longest of the recordings in the collection. I'm not going to play the whole thing, obviously. A total of 1578 RPM sides, totaling over 1 hour of material. He touched on many points, speaking of things dear to him. He spoke of the prisons, which he felt were horribly outdated. It's important to note that this is the same governor who pardoned more men than any other governor in Colorado's history, none of which ever offended to go back to prison again.
"We have not advanced a step beyond the conditions of the Stone Age. When an offender stole his neighbor's meat, he was thrown into a cave and a stone was rolled across the entrance to prevent his escape. Our cell houses still follow the original blueprints of those primitive hillside prisons. The steel doors which bolt the exits today are far more effective in breaking the spirits of men, in developing criminal instincts, and in working to the general disadvantage of society than all the ignorant methods of our forefathers in the days when sharpened stones comprised the only cutting implements and the wheel was something unknown."
He also spoke of the danger of letting the federal government have too much power, particularly in time of war. He was concerned that efforts being taken to provide security for the people and to provide for the troops overseas might trample the rights of individual citizens and states. It's an argument of individual and state freedoms that could easily just as easily have been a speech in the first decade of the 21st century, let alone the first decade of the 1940s.
There exists in this country today a plan to commence the remodeling of the lives of American free men on a basis so dictatorial, so monarchistic, so bureaucratic, that its very exposition proves its hostility to our American form of government. Our Constitution was framed on the idea that individuals should be permitted to live their lives according to the dictates of their own consciences, and that they should be permitted to go as far as their own ability and willingness to work might permit, provided they do not injure others. Has any good reason appeared to change this plan of life? Have we come to the point in this country where it is necessary, in order for us to live, that we must modify and control the attitudes and thoughts and actions of every human being in America according to a chart developed by some group which would make us conform to a national scheme?
And finally, in this last take, the governor says farewell to the legislature and to his fellow Coloradans.
In closing, I in farewell. So long as those philosophies continue, which would spell destruction and defeat to the allied cause, you must plan and toil and legislate for the good of civilization. You have proved yourself. Colorado and America know that your loyalty is as constant as the colors in the stars and stripes. Gentlemen and ladies, on behalf of the people of Colorado, I salute you as Americans and patriots.
You've just heard an address by the Honorable Ralph L. Carr, Governor of Colorado. He spoke to a joint session of the House and Senate of the 34th Colorado General Assembly. Governor Carr was introduced by Governor-elect John C. Vivian. This broadcast came to you from Denver.
This is Denver, KOA.
Governor Carr was honored by a medal that was presented to him by the Japanese-American community in 1949. They never forgot the kindness that he showed. Governor Carr died on September 22, 1950. While preparing for another run for the Senate, a race in which he had tremendous support from the people he had tried to protect in 1942. He was 62 years old. In 1976, a monument was erected in Sakura Square in downtown Denver's Little Tokyo district by the Japanese-American community, thanking him for his service so many years ago. Many of the internees that were sent to Colorado actually stayed in Colorado to make homes. And as we speak, a new home for the Colorado State Courts is being built a block from the state capitol in Denver. It is to be named the Ralph L. Carr Colorado Judicial Complex, a fitting memorial for the man the Denver Post called Colorado's Person of the Century, writing in 1999, "He didn't tunnel through 6 miles of mountain rock or build an airport. He had little to do with the brewing of a homegrown brand of beer. He didn't even win us a Super Bowl. What he did was take a stand. In one of America's darkest hours, he defended humanity and decency, a move that cost him a career and sent ripples of goodwill rolling through Colorado for years. Thank you very much." Are there any questions? If you'd like, you can please feel free to come and talk to me afterwards. Thank you very much.
Well, I want to thank Carrie, Tim, Mark, and Lance for their wonderful presentation. Another great session has been conquered in an ARSC conference. Thank you very much, everyone.